Coast to Coast AM is an American late-night radio show that covers many topics of the strange and unusual. Most popular are assorted conspiracy theories and the paranormal. Created by Art Bell and Alan Corberth in the year 1988, Coast to Coast AM can still be heard on the late-night airwaves even today. With a time slot of 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Eastern Time Zone, Coast to Coast has a very loyal listener base, with over 10 million listeners at its height in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Art Bell was the original host for over 22 years and is considered a well-respected pioneer in exploring the paranormal publicly. Not only would Bell have scheduled guests, but he would open the lines to his listeners to share their own thoughts of the otherworldly or ideas on conspiracy theories. On February 21st, 1997, Art Bell would invite a listener onto his show to talk about some strange experiences with an unusual hole that was located on his property. This interview would set into motion increased interest in the community of Ellensburg, Washington, and the Monastash Ridge to be exact. In part one of my three-part exploration of Mel's hole, I will be sharing what I've learned about Mel Waters and his first two of five interviews with Art Bell. Mel's hole is said to be a bottomless pit and is often brushed off as being an urban myth. But the mystery surrounding this hole and the person to publicly expose its existence on Coast to Coast AM has caused many people to take a deeper look. There are assorted tales involving this crevasse, some of which include strange animal behavior, black beams of light, and the curious case of who Mel Waters actually was. Welcome to the Dark Side of Lightwork. I'm Wynn Thornley. In life, I'm a professionally practicing esoteric teacher and channel to the ethers, specializing in demystifying the dark arts and the paranormal. I'm also a supernatural nerd and do a lot of personal research into things that go bump in the night. My fascination with the unknown began when I was a kid, due to having my own misunderstood psychic experiences. I believe my lifelong fascination with the strange and unusual has prepared me for the work I'm called to do now, taking me to places other lightworkers will not go. These experiences have taught me a lot about how many fallacies we are told and actually believe about the world of the unknown. Join me as I share with you what I've learned about the realms of the paranormal, mystics of the past, and places that might make you feel uneasy. I want to lift the veil a little bit and take the Hollywood out of the supernatural and metaphysics. And if you like what you hear, follow along by subscribing and please tell your friends. I would like to begin this episode by giving a big shout out to Karen Kolonowski. Thank you so much for joining my Patreon community in the month of May. Take a scroll back to see the extra perks you now have access to, including exclusive videos, behind-the-scenes research content, bonus episodes, and guided meditations. I appreciate your support in my independent podcast efforts, and this also goes for all loyal Patreons who have joined over the last couple of years. Thank you so much. If you're interested in learning more about what goes on over at my Patreon community, I have a link ready for you in my show notes. One last thing I would like to share is that I'm incredibly grateful for the response to my new offering of haunted field trips. There has been loads of interest in sharing on my social media pages. I'm happy to report that groups are forming for all three trips that are open for registration right now, with two already being half sold out. Frank's Slide in July and the field trip focusing on the Banff Springs Hotel coming this September. Don't delay if you want in on these unique experiences. I also have a link ready for you in my show notes to learn a little bit more, and even to register for the field trip that excites you the most. Okay, I'm all done sharing some news with you about other parts of my offerings. Now, on to the show. Mel's Hole is one of those paranormal stories that leaves you left wondering. The story is full of twists and turns, and to think it all began with an interview to join a late-night radio show back in 1997. When this episode topic was suggested by a loyal listener earlier this year, it sounded familiar to me, but I couldn't quite recall where I heard this story before. So, to the Google I went. If I would have stopped the research stage after reading the first few articles I found, the story of Mel's Hole would have ended as a complete hoax and urban legend. But that's not my researching style. Early into the researching stage, I became aware of the original interviews between Art Bell and Mel Waters. Then, bells and whistles began going off. I was an avid listener of Coast to Coast AM in my late teens and all through my 20s. My next step was to locate the original interviews, which was easier than I thought. I found a podcast called Art Bell's Vault Tapes. Color me excited. I listened to all 5 shows from the vault, plus another episode with a man named Red Elk that I will cover in part 2. This topic is definitely compelling, and it caused quite a stir with Art's listeners back in the day. Mel Waters himself sounds and feels like an everyday Joe. As he shares his story, he does it in a very matter-of-fact manner, and it's easy to believe this man has experienced something strange. The information he shared about what he found on the property he lived on has led to so much interest that even today, there are groups who organize scouting trips trying to find the location of Mel's hole. There's also a shroud of mystery as to who Mel Waters actually was, which adds to this strange and unusual tale. In follow-up interviews with Bell, Waters claims his life changed drastically after talking about this hole publicly on Coast to Coast. Claims including government intervention and the eventual bad fortune Waters would experience in the early 2000s. To be frank, in my researching efforts, I found a bunch of videos and articles on Mel's hole. Many of them were repetitive and actually twisted some of the information given in the original interviews. Almost like these bloggers or video creators had not actually listened to the original audio files between Mel and Art. So, the sources I found most useful were the original interviews. Everything right from the horse's mouth, as you will. I'll begin this podcast series sharing what exactly makes Mel's hole so intriguing to the paranormal community. Mel's hole is said to be located on a rural property backing onto the Monastash Ridge. The Monastash Ridge is a long, anticline mountain ridge located in the central region of Washington State in the U.S. The Monastash Ridge runs mostly east to west in the Kittitas and Yakima counties for approximately 50 miles. The area we're most concerned about for this episode is a private property which is about 10 miles west of the city of Ellensburg, Washington. The location is a little vague these days, with only a couple people who claim to have actually seen Mel's hole in person, one being a man named Mel Waters. Mel Waters married a woman who was the legal owner of this piece of property. Her name has never been revealed by Mel, in protection of her privacy, I would assume. Mel moved onto this piece of land sometime in the year 1993. Another interesting bit of information I found out about this property is that the location is close to the Yakima Firing Range and the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. This means there is a military and government presence in this area. This will become important information a little bit later. It didn't take long before Mel became aware of an unusual hole located in the deep woods of his new property. At first, Mel thought it might have been an old mining shaft or fissure, but the more Mel hung around this hole, the more he became convinced this was something else altogether. The past owner of the property was aware of this crevasse, and so were the locals to the area, including the indigenous community. The area knew this hole to be a bottomless pit, and referred to it by the name Devil's Hole. And the indigenous? They had been aware of this hole since the 1800s or even earlier. It was Mel's appearance on Coast to Coast AM that gave way to the mass populace renaming this anomaly Mel's Hole. According to Mel, this was no ordinary hole. He described it to be a little over 9 feet in diameter. The walls of the hole were supported by what appeared to be hand-laid stones, which supported the walls of the hole until about 15 feet deep. From there, the walls became exposed earth, and the hole plunged into darkness, with no one really knowing how deep it actually goes. Mel revealed that the surrounding community would use this hole as a garbage dump. He would tell Art Bell, quote,
"Well, so we've been here several years. We take all of our trash rubbish there. Anything we have to get rid of, we take it and just throw it in the hole there. People from all around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's just been going on for a long time. Well, I got to thinking one day, how come this hole is not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole."
Unquote. By 1996, Mel began spending a lot of time conducting tests and observations trying to learn more about what was going on in and around this hole. He became curious with the fact that this hole never seemed to fill up. He explained that he himself had thrown lots of items into the hole, including a refrigerator and 2 TV sets. Others would discard all kinds of garbage, including carcasses of cattle in some cases. Mel also admitted there was a regular visits from a Mexican local who would deposit worn vehicle tires into the hole, this occurring every month while he lived on the property. Waters decided to rig up some 20-pound monofilament fishing line and positioned a rod rigged up over the center of the hole. He knew by weighting the line and letting it drop down, he would be able to determine how deep this hole really was. To weight the line, he said all he used was a regular 1-pound lead fishing weight. This was an easy test for Mel to administer, as he described himself as a retired deep-sea fisherman, shark fisherman to be exact. So he had all of this equipment at the homestead already. When he went through 3,600 feet of line, he became baffled. It was at this point Mel expanded upon this original experiment. He brought up the line and added a packet of lifesavers to the end. He said the addition of the candy was useful to determine at what depth there might have been a waterline in the fissure. The idea was that the lifesavers would show signs of deterioration when they hit the water level, but according to Waters, he never did hit a waterline. Mel would go on to claim that he would eventually use upwards of 80,000 feet of line, making this hole a little more than 15 miles deep. Here are some other things Mel would share about this bottomless pit. Waters noticed quite early in his exploration that there was no echo to be observed when you shouted or made noise at the entrance. Quote,
"Well, I mean, the normal thing to do is kind of like yell into there, see an echo, and I've never heard an echo come out of that thing. And it's one of the first things I noticed about it."
Unquote. Over time, Waters began to observe how animals would interact with the hole. For the most part, they would avoid the whole diameter of the hole when possible, even his pet dogs. Quote,
"As usual, I brought the dogs with me. They wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing, and they went back to the Suburban and hung out over there. If I tried to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig in their feet. They do not want to go anywhere near that hole."
Unquote. This behavior was not limited to his dogs either. Waters described how he noticed an avoidant behavior with the wild animals and mentioned that he never even saw birds fly over the opening, which at this point, his wife Amel had covered the opening with a large steel lid to prevent any kind of accidents. Even then, the birds still avoid the entrance, opting to fly around the opening. But the animal aversion had me thinking. It also had some of the callers wondering. Maybe this odd animal behavior wasn't due to paranormal activity, per se. Maybe Mel's dogs and the wild animals could sense the death inside the hole. Mel did confess that some of the locals had discarded livestock carcasses within the hole. One caller thought that maybe the animals could sense the ghosts of the departed animals discarded down the hole. I'm not really too sure about that. The anatomy of the animal's soul doesn't really work that way. But this had me thinking about my own dog, Knuckles. He has a pretty good sniffer, and when we take him to the vet, he sure acts funny. We believe his sensitive nose can smell the pets who were euthanized. I'm not quite convinced that the animal aversion was due to supernatural reasons, but more instinct. At this point, we can get into one of the strangest stories Mel Waters shares with our Belle about this hole. Waters revealed a story that was actually shared with him by a neighbor of his. This is what he told Belle during his first live appearance on Coast to Coast. Quote,
"This could be an apocryphal story, but one guy claims he threw his departed canine down into the hole. And the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. He was a hunter and he was out there hunting and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar and he had the same little metal thing on his collar there. And he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew he threw the dog into the hole."
Unquote. Though Mel insists this was a story shared with him and not his own unique experience, he still couldn't explain it. And he also didn't seem 100% convinced this actually happened. But it is a story that is shared far and wide on the internet. Many articles and blogs I read seem to share this as fact and evidence of supernatural things happening at Mel's hole. But when you listen to the recorded interviews, you get a whole different feel from Waters himself. One of the last three strange tales Mel would share with Art Bell about this hole would be included in his second interview, taking place about 3 days after his original appearance on Coast to Coast AM. Mel decided to begin to talk a little more with his neighbors, trying to figure out the origins of this hole and if they had any strange tales to share with him. One of his neighbors, whose name was not mentioned, told Mel that they had witnessed a massive black beam of light come up and out of the hole from time to time. Blacker than night, he said. This was something Mel himself had never experienced, but decided to share with the Coast to Coast listeners anyway. Mel also shared that another local, who has been in the area for decades, said that this hole was once surrounded by a ring of larger stones, saying that this was many decades ago now. When Mel asked this man to draw an illustration of what this ring of stones looked like, he said his neighbor drew what appeared to be something very similar to Stonehenge. There were no signs of these stones left behind at the time of Mel's or his wife's ownership of this property, but he considered that interesting information all the same. There's also something else Mel shared in his second interview with Art Bell, something that would go on to alter Mel's life for years. One thing I should mention is that Mel Waters did not ask to be interviewed by Art Bell in his initial communication. It was Art Bell that asked Mel to join his show live. Waters originally faxed Bell his story with hopes that it would be read during one of his live shows, that maybe the Coast to Coast AM audience would have ideas of what might explain what he was experiencing with this hole on his property. Art was so intrigued that he said he just had to have Waters on his show. After Mel's first appearance on Coast to Coast, he claimed he would have a series of odd events to occur in the days after his February 21st appearance. Within 24 to 48 hours after his first interview, Mel decided to take a drive up to the hole and check things out. He found his access road was now blocked off, and he would be greeted by a trio of unknown men. He said these men claimed to be government agents. One was described as being plain clothed, and the other two were dressed in military garb. Behind the men, Mel also saw some people dressed in hazmat suits wandering about. The man in plain clothes informed Mel that this area was now restricted to anyone but military or government personnel, this being due to a plane crash in the area. But Mel was confused, as he saw no signs of a plane crash. There was no smoke to be smelled or seen, was what he described. This did not settle well with Waters. He became agitated at the fact that he was restricted from parts of his own property, and their story just didn't make any sense. This is when things got even more strange. From Waters' account, he said he was then informed that if he did not comply, he would be falsely accused and arrested for concealing a drug lab on his property. This is where Mel became a little more transparent. Art Bell asked Waters if he did have an illegal drug lab on site. Mel's went on to share that since his retirement, he had been dabbling in the holistic healing arts, specifically herbal medicines. He was working with the indigenous of the Nevada regions and cultivating medicinal plants used by those tribes. He claims this blend of plants are beneficial for healing things like the flu, common cold, and even more serious ailments like HIV. He assured Art that there was nothing illegal like meth or of the like being concocted on his property, but he did say that the government agents implied they would make it look like there was. Remember earlier when I mentioned that Mel's property was located close to the Yakima firing range? I decided to do a little more research on this facility, and here's what I learned. Since 1942, the Yakima firing range has been used by the U.S. military in some capacity up until about 2013. It was most often used for maneuver training, land warrior system testing, and as a live fire exercise area. In addition to its role as a training facility, the Yakima firing range has been asserted to play a major role in Echelon, the global surveillance network operated by Five Eyes. I had not heard of Echelon or Five Eyes before this, so I decided to dig a little deeper on what that was all about. Here's what I found out. Echelon was initially a secret government code name. Echelon is a surveillance program which includes signals intelligence, the Signet Collection, and Analysis Network. Echelon is operated by the United States with the aid of four other signatory states in the UK-USA Security Agreement, those being Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom, also known as the Five Eyes. Echelon was formed in the late 1960s to supervise the military and diplomatic communications of the Soviet Union and its Eastern Bloc allies during the Cold War, with the project becoming formally established in 1971. By the end of the 1990s, the system referred to as Echelon had evolved beyond its military and diplomatic origins. It expanded into, quote,
a global system for the interception of private and commercial communications,
unquote. Basically, a structure for mass surveillance and industrial espionage. I read that by the year 2013, the Yakima Training Center was going through a transition with rumors that the functioning portions of the facility were being moved to the Aerospace Data Facility at the Buckley Space Force Base in Colorado. According to the American author and journalist James Bamford, the facility's focus on satellite communications led to its closure. Quoting Bamford from 2013,
"That's history now. Cyberspace and supercomputers are the frontier."
Unquote. Interesting. I wonder if the agents that Mel Waters was said to have encountered were part of this special communications section of the Yakima Training Center. And what would their involvement have to do with this bottomless pit found on Waters' property? This is what Ken Cooper, a spokesman for the Army's Yakima Training Center, said about the incident Mel Waters shared. This dismissive statement was found in an article the Tri-City Herald published in 1997. Quote,
"What I understand is, this Ellensburg guy said he had some property on the Monastash Ridge, and he was going up there to visit it and was stopped by soldiers. The Army is not hiding an aviation accident, nor an 80,000-foot deep pit. We're just training, just like we always do."
Unquote. Plain and simple, right? The military would have no reason to lie or conceal information. Or would they? This is where I'll close down this episode. In part 2 of 3 of my exploration of Mel's hole, I will share what happened to Mel Waters after he was approached by these government officials and what a local geologist said about the existence of a hole 80,000 feet deep. I will then cover what an intertribal Native American medicine man named Red Elk has to share about Mel's hole. Thank you so much for popping by and spending some time with me today. I really appreciate you being here. I'm excited to see an increase in loyal listeners monthly, and I would love to hear your feedback. I invite you to leave a message at my Anchor FM page letting me know how you like it. You can also share your personal experience with a show topic, or even share a show idea. I listen to each message and may include your idea in a future episode. Since I'm an independent podcast host and producer, a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, follow on Spotify, or a review on where you're listening to me right now would really help others find my show. A quick share is also appreciated. Outside of my podcast platforms, you can find me on social media by searching for The Dark Side of Light Work with Wynn Thornley. If you like bonus content, I invite you to check out my exclusive Patreon community. Your contribution helps with the growth and expansion of The Dark Side of Light Work. I have lots of exclusive content available for my loyal Patreons that isn't available anywhere else. Behind-the-scenes research content, meditations, bonus episodes, and videos. Any support is welcome, and I feel grateful for all the support I've already received. Thank you so much. I'm also expanding the conversation on the dark arts, paranormal, and episode topics over on the Wisdom app. There you can find me going live throughout the month. Wisdom is a blend of live radio and podcasting, as all live conversation becomes archived so you can listen in later. Wisdom also offers the option to chat live with me, so I invite you to be my guest and join the conversation. Thank you once again for listening until the end. I look forward to dropping the next episode soon. So until then, take good care.